This is Musings of a Geek, where we talk about geek culture from the belly of the beast at least once a week. Once again, I'm Dan Zisko.
I'm Desmond Hassing.
And I'm Will.
Oh, he's Will. Starting off like we did last time, how you guys been?
Better.
Good.
It's less hot today for those who listened last week.
It is less hot today. I heard a rumor that Phoenix today was a cool 93.
So, well, you know, it's so much nicer in Phoenix when it's hot.
Is it ever nice in Phoenix? My buddy Andy is out in Phoenix. So Andy, if you're listening to this, I mean, is it ever really nice out in Phoenix?
Actually, yeah. A lot of the time. If you stand in the sun will literally bake you alive. But if you get some shade, there's no moisture in the air like here.
So it's not
so it's hot, it's but it's hot. not.
It's a dry heat.
It doesn't sap your energy. It doesn't take away anything.
It's like James Caan in.
Let's just insult all of America.
We had a few interesting things happen this week. Got the first podcast out, which I cut, which was a very interesting experience. I'd never actually cut something like that before. So using Audacity to cut the podcast, there was a slight learning curve, but I got it out, and I think
a little bit. And there were some boosted levels there that were a little jarring, which we'll hope to fix in the future.
Yes, we will. I think I'm going to fix the levels on the tracks before I combine them. The other thing is we switched over websites. So musingsofageek.com is still active, but it goes directly to the podcast, and the blog can now be found.
Which is perfect, because who really wants to read?
Well, I mean, the blog is now found at blog.musingsofageek.com.
Your most recent blog has exactly one comment, and it's from me.
And it's from you. Yeah, so we can actually jump in. Will, I put a few things up there this week for you because you've said in the past you're a big gamer and got a couple of video game things on there.
I do enjoy the gaming.
Yes.
That first note right there, Lupin in Red 2, is totally for you.
So
I'll give you $5 if you can remember who that is.
Are we talking about Lupin from Harry Potter?
Yes.
Oh, he's in Red 2.
Yes, he's in Red 2. He plays an arms dealer / information broker.
That's cool.
Or something akin to that.
Did Red 1 make money?
Red 1 must have made money because they're coming back. And it's owned by DC, so it's not like they weren't paying other people money.
Although we've heard about that, if we've learned anything from the Ayn Rand book, you don't have to make money on your first movie in order to make a sequel.
No, not at all. You can lose massive amounts of money. Speaking of movies losing lots and lots of money, let's have a brief head nod to the geniuses in Hollywood, who managed to have the least grossing weekend in the history of cinema.
Excellent.
Go Hollywood.
What's out right now?
Branded. I saw Branded.
When you saw Branded, which we'll talk about. But, you know, going back, I put a few things on there, and the first thing that kind of made me think of you was something I saw maybe about a week and a half ago for story time. Will let me borrow his Xbox 360 so I could play Portal, and I'd never played Portal. And I'm currently going through Portal 2, and realizing halfway through that the world of Portal is the same world as Half-Life. And they are actually remaking the original Half-Life, which I thought was kind of interesting. They don't usually remake a whole lot of games, and for Valve to remake Half-Life,
They didn't used to remake a lot of movies either, and then they realized, hey, you know what? People will pay for it.
There you go.
Did you play the original Half-Life?
I did not. It was funny. I got the orange box because I had heard the good reviews on Portal, and Portal was one of the five games that came in the orange box, but it was my understanding of the story is that it was the throw-in game.
Exactly.
Sort of,
exactly.
The afterthought game that they threw on there because it was sort of designed like a demo to try out a new concept that might have been introduced into one of the other games. They developed it into its own mini game, and it won Game of the Year.
Yes, because it's awesome.
Because it is a brilliant game. I mean, it really, really is. And Portal 2 takes, if you haven't played Portal 2, it basically takes that concept and expands on it exponentially. Portal 2 is, I find it to be fascinating. But what really got me was when, you know, you're playing the game, and you notice, I think it's the last level, where they actually sort of bring in Black Mesa, and that was the first time where I went, oh my god, this is the same world as Half-Life, and I played the original Half-Life.
I think there are references to Black Mesa before the last level, if you find them.
I didn't notice them.
Okay.
I didn't notice them.
There are rooms that if you wander around to, you can see computer screens where they are doing the pie charts on the income versus Black Mesa or something.
Yes, and obviously it always looked like Half-Life.
It
looked like a Half-Life environment.
It just did. Yeah, it did. I mean, it did, but you know, they're basically like what they did with GoldenEye is they're taking the old environment that Half-Life was built in and they're updating it, like I said, like I did with GoldenEye. Now, GoldenEye for the Nintendo 64, I think, is a better game than GoldenEye for the Wii, but it may have been on PS3, but the fact that instead of releasing Half-Life 3, which everybody's really waiting for, they decided to go back and redo Half-Life, and I'm not sure why.
I hear it's brilliant, but I'll be honest. I gave probably the other games in the Orange Box about a half hour each, and I wasn't good at it for the same reason. I don't do first-person shooters. Mm-hmm. I mostly wander around getting shot. I don't know why. I get frustrated, and I quit.
Yeah, me too. I don't usually play first-person shooters. I picked up Modern Warfare 2 was my first FPS, and I just terrible at it.
There's really only one reason to play a game like that, and that's to play with a large group of friends, and it always sucks when you're the one who dies the most.
Well, the only people I know who actually play these games are my ex soldier friends who all came back with PTSD but love playing those games. I don't know if that's therapeutic or not, but good for them.
Well, hey, whatever gets you through the night. I mean, what did Frank Sinatra say? Whether it be women, a prayer, or a bottle of Jack Daniels, I'm paraphrasing. But, you know, whatever gets you through the night. So
really, you're paraphrasing? Because that totally sounded like Frank.
I'm going to find the quote, asshole. I'm going to find it right now.
Well, what should we talk about while Dan is being an Uber nerd trying to prove his point?
How was your day?
Not that bad. I didn't work that long. Although I had like 7 tables.
Cool.
It was awful. It was horrid. And then I watched the Last Resort premiere preview.
Awesome.
Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
Not a clue.
It's the new Andre Brower show where he's the ballistic missile sub.
I know that name.
The black guy.
Oh, yeah. I saw the preview for that, during that section of time before they show you the movie previews.
Yes, and it whatever at the movie.
Your little movie theater or what have you. It struck me as strange. I mean, that looks like it should be a movie, but somehow they're turning it into an entire series.
They are. And the first half of the episode feels very much like they're just remaking Crimson Tide. But everybody's trying not to fire the nuclear weapons. And then the second half is a little better, but not really. Hopefully it'll be good.
It didn't catch my attention enough to actually watch it. So.
No. Well, I'm looking.
Telling me I probably shouldn't.
Well, if you like Lost or Defying Gravity or any number of shows that a lot of like flashbacks, it's the show for you.
All right.
And the quote is, I'm for anything that gets you through the night, be it prayer, tranquilizers, or a bottle of Jack Daniels. So there, I found the quote.
Good for you.
You're not
a fan of girls?
No, tranquilizers.
Okay.
I'm a fan of girls, but tranquilizers.
Oh, I thought you said prayer. You said girls.
No, I said prayer. Prayer, oh. Well. God, I feel like we're really low energy today.
Well, you know, we can't just stop and start over.
We're good. We're good.
We're kicking ass.
We've already talked about Half-Life. We can move on. There really apparently wasn't much to talk about Half-Life, which actually leads me into another discussion. I saw online somebody posited the question, you know, speaking of remaking games, GoldenEye brought up, is the Nintendo Wii dead? When was the last time you turned on your Nintendo Wii?
Well, that's a funny thing, because I actually had started playing my Wii again after several years. I like the games where it tells me the last time I played, and I see that it's been like 3 years since I've picked up a game.
Oh,
but it feels like it's only been like 6 months. But yeah, no, actually, because we had a party where I ended up just babysitting all of our friends' kids who came over, because I'm less socially awkward with a bunch of 6-year-olds playing Wii bowling than with people my own age, and they killed me at Wii bowling. I am the worst Wii bowler ever. But yeah, after they left, I got back on a kick of playing Mario Party and Mario Kart, but the phase lasted for about 3 days, and it was gone. I only use my Wii now for Netflix. I find it's the most efficient system to get me quickly onto Netflix.
See, I'm not even using it for Netflix. I got the PS3 for Netflix. Now, I realized that I thought the Wii was dead when I didn't pick up Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
Yeah, no, I didn't do that one either. I did the first Zelda. I played probably through about half of it before I got bored.
The Twilight Princess?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would... Des, did you play Twilight Princess at all?
No.
No, it was...
I haven't owned a Nintendo platform since GameCube.
I mean, and the other thing you got to remember is the Wii U, I think, now has a unconfirmed release date. So, you know, it's... At this point, kind of all the consoles are
they're gearing up. They're gearing up.
The nursing home at this point.
Yeah.
But I think we can agree that certain platforms will probably continue being operational, at least. Like PS3, they'll still probably have second gen, you know.
I mean, it still feels current because you don't have anything better. But I think much like anything you pick up, if you go and you play the newest Grand Theft Auto, it makes you wonder how you ever played the old Grand Theft Auto. It no longer even feels right to be playing it anymore. I assume that's what will happen with the next console, is you'll wonder how you ever did with the old ones.
I don't know, Grand Theft Auto, Vice City, and even San Andreas, which we've had this discussion. I'm more partial to Vice City than San Andreas. They still hold up for me. In fact, I think in many cases they're better than GTA 4. GTA 4 I just did not like.
You know, I probably agree. I really like San Andreas, and GTA 4 I mostly found that I was wandering around trying to kill people and constantly getting interrupted with phone calls from girlfriends who wanted me to take them bowling.
Oh, God, let's go bowling. Or, like, in my real life, if I don't, you know, take a girl bowling, I don't lose, like, status in the game, or I'm not going to get 100% or something. It was ridiculous.
I gotta wonder,
what possessed Rockstar to add the girlfriends? And the friends and the cousin and the darts and the drinking.
Obviously, I mean, they were trying to introduce a lot of things into the game. They're trying to cram a ton of other sorts of games into one. The same way that I felt like I was sort of playing The Sims whenever I had to go find my person new clothes to wear and making friends with people and so on. And all I really want to do is do a tank cheat code and go blow shit up.
Exactly. Or jump, get a helicopter, and see if you can land in a pond in the middle of Central Park.
Wasn't that the point?
That's always the point. That's the point of GTA games.
Just as long as you remember that you're not allowed to shoot people in 1950s Los Angeles.
No, we're talking L.A. Noire, which was...
You are not allowed to shoot civilians.
Good concept, not a great game. Good concept. I liked L.A. Noire. I did see a patch. I don't know if you saw this. I saw a patch. It was on Reddit. Somebody on the GTA 4 PC game patched a DeLorean, time-traveling DeLorean from Back to the Future, and so you could literally, you're running from the cops, and you can literally turn the time circuits on and jump back in time.
That's brilliant.
So I'm just wondering, do you run into yourself? Like, is it possible to run into yourself?
And what happens?
I don't know. The whole game explodes. It's a paradox. I really have no idea. But yeah, I think the Wii's kind of dead, more so than the Xbox, more so than the PlayStation. It's definitely on its way out. When I didn't pick up Skyward
I think that's
Sword,
true. I think that's true of almost every platform that Nintendo's ever made, except maybe the Super Nintendo system.
Well, I mean, I guess you can tell because they're just not releasing anything big on it anymore.
No, it's because
they're not.
They
what
don't.
Was the last major release.
They've never had a platform really survive after they've upgraded to a new platform. Never. I mean. But let's face it, there are people who still have their Xboxes around because I'm insistent Halo is better than Halo 3.
I'm still more likely to play with my Wii than with Kinect.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I got the Kinect. I really that the Kinect was sort of like getting a treadmill. You got it because you thought it would be a good idea, and you said you would do it, and you did it for an hour, then it ended up in a closet, and you never saw it again.
That's how it's Wii Fit. That's how I felt about Wii Fit.
Yeah, and no, Wii Fit was actually a direct analog to that because people got it thinking they would use it as like a weight loss device, and it really was nothing more than a glorified treadmill or any other sort of exercise equipment you get. You did it for a couple of hours, and you threw it in a closet.
If that, because remember, I think there was some party where Dan tried to do Wii Fit at the party, and it was Dan playing a video game and running in place.
How much did I have to drink that night?
I think you were just sober enough that you were mad at me when I kept making fun of you.
When we first got it, Rachel was living in an apartment, and she wasn't on the ground floor. So anytime we tried to do anything, the people below started banging on the ceiling with something.
I used to do that when my sister's neighbors would have sex. Same kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know what they thought we were doing.
I had these upstairs neighbors when I lived in El Mesa with my ex-girlfriend, who it was a single girl, and her boyfriend and her literally hours on end the loudest sex you could possibly have. It was ridiculous. It was to the point of like the first couple nights was like good for them, and then it got to the point where how can you have this much loud, raucous sex. I don't get it.
Well, now you know. Now you just go and you tell your neighbors, I'm really sorry. We were having a very enthusiastic session of Wii Fit.
Wii Fit. Interesting side note to that story. That was that relationship of the apartment above me ended up breaking up in the classic way of I came home one evening after work and she was throwing his shit out of their second story window. It was awesome. There were clothes. There was a TV.
Good times. It reminds me of for those who don't know, I'm a bit of a Reddit addict. My favorite Reddit post for the day was the guy who posted a picture of his parents' bed with the headboard.
Yes! I saw this.
It had about four or five stuffed animals that made a buffer between the headboard and the wall, and it looked decorative, but he was posting it with that realization of what the true function of having these buffer stuffed animals between the headboard, the wall, really was, and just how frightening that was.
It's because you don't want, your parents don't want their kids hearing the headboard hit the wall during sexy time.
I may have been one of the only, like, you know, blessed children who had two married parents at home who never had a parents having sex story. I'm convinced that I was the last time.
It's possible. Or you were just a very good sleeper.
If you knew my parents, it's quite possibly true.
All right. So I threw some video game stuff up there. There really didn't seem much to be discussed about it. The Wii's dead. They're making Half-Life.
Now we move on to things that I don't know.
No, I tried.
We're gonna move.
I tried.
And I appreciate that.
All right. So we talked a lot about Joss Whedon last time with the Avengers.
You
and
say that like we're not going to talk a lot about Joss Whedon every time.
Today and every time, but with the Avengers. And there was an interview with him a few months ago where he said that he was doing Much Ado About Nothing. And Des and I being, you know, the theater people, I love Much Ado About Nothing. I tried to get a reading of it at that theater that we talked about last week up. I wanted to direct it. I love the show. I'd love to be in the show. I'd love to do something with that show. I love the Kenneth Branagh, Emma Thompson one from the 90s. It's a great adaptation of that play.
Perhaps if Keanu Reeves wasn't there.
Keanu Reeves wasn't even that bad. He really wasn't. I mean, yeah, he played Keanu Reeves, but he wasn't that bad. However, Joss Whedon is doing a Much Ado About Nothing. He's doing it modern. He's doing it
also, I'd like to state
in black and white.
For the record, that I think, just possibly, that Nathan Fillion may be Joss Whedon's Ben Affleck.
Who is this? What would you say?
You know how Kevin Smith says Ben Affleck can play anything?
Yeah.
In an interview over the weekend at the Toronto International Film Festival, Joss was asked who's especially good in this. And he went, Nathan's good in this.
Of course Nathan's good in this. Nathan's playing Dogberry. So
I still insist that I think Alan would be a better choice. Alan Tudyk would be a much better choice for Dogberry.
He's not in it. But I'm happy because it didn't have a release date. It didn't have a distributor. It was just kind of a pet project. He filmed it, you were telling me, at
he
his
filmed
house.
It at his house in Santa Monica over 12 days.
Nice.
Yeah, which is awesome. Lionsgate, though, picked up Much Ado About Nothing, so we should see it. And I really want to see a Joss Whedon with the Joss Whedon, you know, actor troupe that he has. I really want to see Much Ado About Nothing. He's got Alexis Sentosov playing Benedict, Amy Acker's playing Beatrice, Reed Diamond is playing Don Pedro, Clark Gregg, who's awesome and we love, is playing Leonardo, Sean Mayer, who I think is an odd choice for this, but he'll probably be good, played Simon in Firefly.
It's
playing Don John.
Only odd if you start to think about the fact that, like, in a real Shakespeare, Sean would be your Claudio.
Yes. That's what I don't get.
Have you seen pictures of the kid who's playing Claudio? He's like an emo kid, and everything he's done apparently requires him to wear a hoodie and be in some version of stubble. And because of that, I think we're seeing a Much Ado About Nothing where Joss Whedon is actually Claudio. And we may see it complete down to purple backpack.
No. I thought it was somebody who I didn't think it was. Claudio's being played by Fran Kantz, Kratz. He's the guy who played Topher in Dollhouse. And I love Topher. Topher
yes.
was great. Fran Kratz, yes.
He almost always plays someone in like a hoodie or who's very emo.
Topher wasn't necessarily emo. He was just sort of a crazy computer guy.
Okay.
And that's,
if you say so.
I liked his character in Dollhouse. I really did.
How many times in a work environment for a nefarious corporation did he get into very personal conversations about his own insecurities?
Yeah, but it was that kind of company. It was that kind of branch of that kind of company. It was that Dollhouse.
Are you calling the nefarious company emo?
No. The LA branch of the Dollhouse was very emo. All the way from the beginning through the end, it was very emo. It was all about our
Reed Diamond disagrees with you.
Reed Diamond was in the first half of the first season, and he went out with a bang.
Actually, he was in 13 episodes.
Spy of the House of Love is my favorite episode of that. Yeah, I think Spy of the House of Love is my favorite episode of the series. I really do. I may have to rewatch it, but where Reed Diamond finally gets, they figure out that he's the NSA spy, and Addie throws down, and they put him in the attic, and that episode was just fucking brilliant. Epitaphs were good, too, but that episode was brilliant.
It bothers me somewhat that you know the names of all the Dollhouse episodes.
Not all of them, only the ones I like.
Okay.
Which I do like a lot of them, so.
So basically the whole first season.
Yeah, well, I like the second season.
And about half the second season.
I like the second season. The second season I thought ended strongly if it felt rushed. Did you watch Dollhouse?
No.
Well.
It didn't.
No,
Bill will.
It's a Joss Whedon show, right?
Yes. Yeah, okay.
I need to Google this guy. I'm.
Don't worry, Bill. You'll be watching it soon. We'll do a pilots episode for Dollhouse.
We've mentioned doing the pilots episode, and I was thinking today. You mentioned it. We were doing. Was it Firefly?
We're doing Firefly in honor of the 10th anniversary of Firefly.
So I thought, you know, I will go and I'll watch it, and I will come as the perspective of the person who has only seen the pilot and be able to bring that perspective in. For you know any members of the audience who haven't seen it before until I realized
Bill,
that
I'm pretty sure
none of your audience.
I'm pretty sure everyone in America has seen Firefly at this point. No, I'm kidding.
I even got Rihanna to watch Firefly. It was great. I got her in the first episode and she got hooked.
You can't get her to watch Star Wars.
I know, and I got her to watch Firefly.
Well, Firefly is better than Star Wars.
Yeah, I can.
And you lost your audience.
And then lost my audience. But look for it. Joss Whedon's Much Ado About Nothing. You know, I like it as a theater guy.
It's all black and white.
Yeah, but I like it as a theater guy. I like it as a Joss Whedon fan. I like it as, you know, taking a play and doing something different with it. I'd really like to see Nathan Fillion play Dogberry. I think he's going to do a great job. You're right, Alan Tudyk would have been better in that role.
Not necessarily better, because I haven't seen the movie yet. I mean...
That's true. He might have been different. Like, if I had to cast somebody...
He would have been a more traditional Dogberry.
Yeah.
Nathan Fillion, to be funny, has to be someone who's capable of doing things the right way and then somehow manages not to, rather than just a screw-up from the start. If he's a screw-up from the start, he's not funny.
Which is an interesting take on that character. I mean, it really is.
Well, it could be, yeah.
Because traditionally, Dogberry is played as a screw-up. If you take Dogberry and make him as competent, but things just keep going sideways for him, well, that's different. I'd like to see that, I think.
Yes, it might be interesting. Although I still don't think he'll be better than Michael Keaton. I'm not really sure that anyone can be better than Michael Keaton.
Speaking of Michael Keaton.
Really? Okay. Travesty remake number one.
Oh, yes, they're remaking RoboCop. They are remaking RoboCop. Hugh Laurie was going to play the head of the evil corporation. And I thought Hugh Laurie would have been great, but he's no longer doing it, and he's now doing it in favor of Michael Keaton has now taken on that role.
Actually, I'm not sure on that one. I think that may be Gary Oldman now.
I trust Gary Oldman to do anything.
Gary Oldman's pretty darn good. Pretty darn good. Not quite as disturbing a thing to think about as Alan Rickman playing Ronald Reagan. But
Did you see the stills on that today?
Yeah.
They had the stills up of it's something called The Butler, and it has Alan Rickman
playing Reagan. It's
Jane
produced by
Fonda.
Oprah.
Robin Williams
Fonda
is in that movie. Robin Williams
Nancy.
Is playing, Robin Williams is playing Eisenhower.
This is already, we're off to a bad start here.
Yeah.
You know. Let's see, who else is it?
However, it does have Alan Rickman. Granted, he's playing Ronald Reagan.
I'll wait and see how it turns out, but I just don't see it.
You're right. You're right in the fact that I've never seen Alan Rickman be really good in anything where he's not allowed to be British.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. All right, so John Cusack is playing Richard Nixon. Robin Williams is playing Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Was this done on a bet?
James Marsden is playing John F. Kennedy. Alan Rickman is Ronald Reagan, who we talked about. Minka Kelly is playing Jackie.
Wait. Cyclops is still acting?
Yeah, he's still acting. He's playing John F. Kennedy. Leif Schreiber will be playing Lyndon B. Johnson. Who else is in this movie?
That's two X-Men alums in one presidential movie. That's one X-Men alum too many.
Yeah, and again, Jane Fonda playing Nancy Reagan. So maybe it was done on a bet.
I got nothing on that. I don't have a complete sentence to make.
I really don't have anything either.
Maybe Oprah just picked up her Rolodex and started calling people at random.
And you get to be in a movie. I don't know.
What's the Lee Daniels is... I don't even know if Oprah's attached to this.
Yeah, I believe she's producing it.
Oh, yeah, no, that was the still. It was Oprah.
With Lee Daniels and Alan Rickman and Jane Fonda.
Well, I guess if you're going to... You know, if you've got that kind of money and you're... if you've got that kind of money and you're going to make a movie... Why not? Like, if I had that kind of money and I'm going to be like, I'm going to make a movie and I'm going to give everybody...
I'm not sure. I don't know how you make a biopic of somebody who is currently in the process of being kind of inaccurately deified.
Reagan?
Yeah.
This isn't really a biopic. This is the story of a White House butler, a fictional White House butler
who happened to be there through all these presidents. How do you do Reagan?
You can't do Reagan well because no one's going to like that.
No, because right now you have people who want to talk about the true story of Reagan, which is a fairly competent president who had his strengths, had his weaknesses, but the Republican Party as a whole wants him to be God Reagan, who did everything right all the time, and sometimes that means he did things even that they don't think he did anymore.
No, the myth of Ronald Reagan now is very comparable to the myth of George Washington about the wooden teeth and the cherry tree and such.
It's, yes.
And it bears no resemblance to the actual human being.
Not much, no.
Had wooden teeth, chase Moby Dick.
Although I did see James Lipton.
That's Captain Ahab, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, come on.
But I did.
It's not a good show unless I get a Bill and Ted reference in there.
I did see James Lipton on a political show, which is always weird to see James Lipton on a political show. But he referred to Ronald Reagan as a B actor.
That's my understanding. Ronald Reagan was not an A-list.
Well, he wasn't a celebrity.
He wasn't an A-list actor at all.
That's not true. He wasn't the leading man.
No, but he was
that
a celebrity.
Doesn't mean that's like saying DeForest Kelly was a B actor,
okay,
because his only headline was Star Trek. These people were in big movies. They just weren't the star of those movies.
Ronald Reagan was a star enough that Art Linkletter pulled him in to do the opening day at Disneyland. So people knew who Ronald Reagan was,
darn
but
right.
I don't necessarily know if I would call him an A-list actor.
Well, part of the problem is our idea of an A-list actor is quite different than other people's. Ronald Reagan, like DeForest Kelly, is one of those people who was put under contract young and who went through the normal course of evolution and just never reached leading man status. That doesn't make them unsuccessful actors. Not from the standpoint of where we would call, like, Bruce Campbell a B-movie actor or a B-list actor.
I don't know if I'd even call Bruce Campbell a B-list actor. He's had enough roles that he's,
oh,
he's recognizable. And
oh, he is, but there's nothing in the present society. There's no stigma attached to the fact that people are in bad product. There's lots of people. We talked last week about Chris Walken in the Prophecy. Okay, I mean, there are good actors who do really, really bad movies. That doesn't mean they're not good.
Well, here's a standard. Do your parents know Bruce Campbell? They'll know Christopher Walken.
No, my parents don't know Bruce Campbell. Good point.
Yeah, but that's a really hard comparison to make.
I define A-list actor as somebody who can star in a movie and carry it by themselves. Like, we are selling this as
really,
the
you think Chris
Angelina
Walken?
Jolie movie. And no, that's why I'm saying Chris, I don't think Chris Walken qualifies, but I think he's at least he's on a higher level than Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell did some cult stuff that is very popular in a specific demographic, and he's now on a show on USA.
Well, yeah, it's a very popular show on USA. It's probably
is any show on USA all that popular?
That one is, and you have to remember that our impression of things like USA are very skewed because we're not watching these things in syndication. From what I understand, Burn Notice is very, very big in syndication.
Yeah, you know, I hear Burn Notice is well. You know, Monk obviously did very well for itself, but
most of the shows on USA don't get sold anywhere near into as many syndicated markets as Burn Notice does.
There you go.
But yeah, no, I guess it's a hard comparison to make. I put Bruce Campbell in the category of people like Clark Gregg, who do very good work, but it takes a specific type of vehicle for people to find out who these people are, because otherwise they're invisible.
He's in the Comic-Con crowd, along with Nathan Fillion coming back to
the Comic-Con crowd. Yeah. The Comic-Con crowd. Although I do maintain you do have a few actors who, because, or at least one comes to mind, but a few actors who, because of television, have kind of broken through that sort of B-movie, but sort of lower tier A. Steve Buscemi. Doing Boardwalk Empire put him into that category.
However, I think even Steve Buscemi is on like a backswing, a downturn at this point in his career. Boardwalk Empire saved it. He was much, much bigger about 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, wasn't that his entire opening monologue skit on SNL not too long ago? Was the people in the audience all coming up and asking how they, as a character actor, could become an A-lister, a leading person?
I didn't see that.
And every person who stood up was some sort of horrible character stereotype, like the magical black man who comes in to fix everything.
Your
Green Mile.
Like Bagger Vance.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, which was a very boring movie. Did you see that movie?
Well, it wasn't a very interesting book
boring.
Either. I mean, the only golf movie ever that was more boring than Legend of Bagger Vance was perhaps 7 Days in Utopia.
Didn't see it.
Well, it was a movie that starred the kid from the third Fast and the Furious movies, Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
That, there you go. It's
Fast and Furious.
It was Fast and Furious.
Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift. Fast and Furious. The Fast and Furious 2. Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. The Faster and Furious.
And the poor kid. The poor kid.
Fast Five.
It's one of those really interesting stories in Hollywood because he was supposed to be the bridge character. Okay. And people so much more like the Chinese guy that now that movie is out of continuity with the rest of the story because now all of the other sequels are taking place before Tokyo Drift because the Chinese guy dies in Tokyo Drift.
Well, and they brought, you know, they brought back Vin Diesel for the last two.
Oh yeah, no,
yeah,
the
last one or
the
two.
The whole point was they were going to take that kid and they were going to do a movie with him and Vin, and then the idea was after that they'd bring the extended cast in. And they'd be able to do more, like, two Fast and Furious every 2 years, and not all of them had to have Vin in them. And instead, the whole audience really accepted this kind of really weird, tall Chinese guy, who I wish I could remember his character name, but I can't. And so because of it, the actual continuity of it is Fast and Furious, Fast and Furious 2, then Fast whatever, Fast and Furious, then Fast 5, then Fast 6, and then finally Tokyo Drift is the last one. Whenever they're done
making
it. I'm
shocked you guys know so much about this. I would have thought it was just like Fast and all you metal militia kids just give us your damn money.
Well, okay, there's an interesting story to that. Fast and the Furious, as bad a movie as it is, was directed by a guy who I really had a lot of respect for the longest time. His name was Rob Cohen. And he also directed the Triple X movie with Vin Diesel and The Skulls and a couple other things. And I called him my favorite sellout director. And what I meant by that was he would get assigned a genre picture from a studio, and he'd make a really good version of that genre picture. He didn't really have the creative drive, I guess, to come up with his own product. But you knew when you sat down to watch one of his bubblegum movies, one of his popcorn movies, that it wasn't going to be a completely awful movie.
He also did the third Mummy movie.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Yeah, he did a third Mummy movie.
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm not quite so happy with him anymore. I didn't think the third Mummy movie was very good.
Well, the third Mummy movie was terrible, but going on about Rob Cohen.
Yeah, so that's why I saw the first one. I don't know if I ever... I think I saw the second one on, like, USA. Tokyo Drift, on the other hand, was a reasonably good movie. I don't think I saw it in the movie theaters, but it was the first, like, Justin Lin movie. And it has a lot to be said for it. It's kind of the polar opposite of the original Fast and the Furious, whereas Fast and the Furious is a morality play about undercover cops and is there something inherently unethical in lying about yourself in order to bust people.
Wow, you've really thought about Fast and the Furious.
A
like,
little bit.
My ex-girlfriend Michelle, if you ever listen to this, she really liked Fast and the Furious. And I think she really liked it because of Vin Diesel. Like, she really had a thing for...
I don't know about that.
Like, the bigger guy with the bald head and the... She called him Yummy. I'll never forget this. I'm going Yummy. Yeah, she called him Yummy, right? She ended up marrying a guy who looks a lot like me,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, girls who really like Vin Diesel are really not going to go for...
But she married a guy that looks a lot like me, oddly enough. But, you know, Michelle, if you're out there, I'm very happy that you're happy.
Obviously, we all have, like, ideals. How often do people get their ideal or what they
I
believe to be
still,
their
that,
ideal?
I mean, that,
no,
that,
no, no, no. You got your
diesel.
Ideal. But can you honestly say that, like, 10 years ago, that in your head, that was your impression of your ideal woman? Or did you get... The woman
no,
who actually is
no,
ideal for you.
Because I like every, I like all women. I like all.
You're a whore.
I'm a whore.
Yeah,
I'm a whore. I like every woman. When we went to the strip club for Phil's bachelor party, it was like, you get a lap dance. You get a lap dance. Yeah, like, I was not picky at all.
Yeah.
That's a euphemism. We went to Billings, Montana for my bachelor party. we went on a nature walk. And we learned how butter is made. It was really fascinating and entertaining.
We also, in Billings, Montana, actually, we went to Las Vegas, but that trip also had the weird cult murder, suicide, murder mystery tour thing.
Murder mystery tour.
We want to hit this topic?
No, we can.
Yeah,
we can. Well, why not?
For the people who like to go to Las Vegas, I suppose. Yeah,
should we give them a shout out? Do we know what their name is?
Look it up, man. Okay, so for my bachelor party, my best man, Jeff, was looking for things to do in Vegas beyond your standard Vegas fare of casinos and strip clubs. And
Primarily because he didn't like the type of strippers we had at the strip club.
He's in a different market, but so he was looking for something else, and
that's a euphemism for gay.
I think everyone knew about that one, Daniel.
Now the cat's out of the bag.
For those of you in Las Vegas, just to give the shout out before Bill tells the story, it's Mystery Adventures in Las Vegas. They're at mysteryadventureslasvegas.com. We actually had a really good time. If you're in Las Vegas or going to Vegas, I definitely recommend checking them out. Drink a little bit beforehand. You'll have a really good time.
Do not bring small children, though.
So what happened was he was looking for other things to do. He checked, I guess, Yelp. Or one of these sorts of sites to find things that were highly rated, other sorts of things to do in Vegas, and found this strange company off the beaten path that takes you out on a bus to various locations and has you go actually solve a murder mystery. And so we ended up in a group of about 12 or so people, I suppose. And so it was five guys out on a bachelor party trip.
Being driven in a bus around a building, but being told that we were being taken to an alternate location.
Yes, we were mingling with our other groups that were with us were two families with small children, so we didn't exactly blend in, I guess you would say.
We were very much, you could tell we were the bachelor party, because, I mean, this was Saturday, we drank heavily on Friday, we're all a little hungover. And we get there, and we're like, hey, we're here. And it literally, like, I walked in, and there were children. I did not know what to do with myself.
But it worked out well, because the day, our daylight hours were spent doing this thing that was, you know, while it's a murder mystery, and it had some very gruesome parts to it, it was on the Hulk. Kind of
wholesome. It was wholesome. Would you agree it was wholesome?
Well, minus the S&M qualities of
it. Okay, yeah, but
it's, like I said, it had a little bit of creepiness to it, but it was wholesome enough to make you want to bathe in sin by the end of it, which is exactly what we did.
And that's what a bachelor party should have. So it ended up actually working out really, really, really well. I will say the funny story about this is we all kind of pulled up, and Jeff, his best man, who, you know, figured this whole thing out, was like, come on, guys, this is going to be great. And the other four of us are like, all right. By the end of it, the five of us were, like, kicking these small children out of the way so we can get to the computer to figure out the clue.
No,
we
got
to do this. Oh, Jeff was. Oh, my God.
No,
Bill and I were sitting very calmly in the rest of the apartment going, are we done?
No, well, no,
is it over?
Jeff and Dan were super into this. And so what
I really was.
What happened, one of the little side things is that at different locations they have these hidden, like, giant marbles, more or less, that if you find them, there's some sort of bonus at the end. And so immediately the little blonde girls go running around to try to find them. And so I'm not going to trample the little blonde girls to find the marble, but Jeff will. And by the end, you know, they're like, have you figured it all out? Have you figured out the mystery and exactly what happened here? And I haven't in the slightest. I've been, you know, going through the motions and playing along and so on. But I haven't actually taken the time to figure any of it out. Dan has the entire plot line figured out to a T. And that is his value in these situations.
Like, literally to the point where I'm like, and this happened, and then this happened, and then this phone call was made, and then this happened, and then this happened, and the guy who's running it's looking at me like, you've put way too much thought into this for just a stupid little afternoon thing.
You and Jeff also spent an extra half hour looking for the emergency exit they had to install, because apparently, when you take drunk guys out in places with secret doors, sometimes they lock you behind the secret doors.
I will say my favorite story is the fastest that any group made it through the mystery is the MGM Grand accounting team. And as an accountant, I found this. I'm like, yeah, we're accountants. We rule. And apparently it was because they had spent a lot of time pre-gaming and they didn't even make it past the first room because they were just too drunk and disruptive, which I'm also an accountant. So that's right. That's what we do.
But they didn't finish it because they were so drunk they couldn't finish. They were so drunk they kicked them out.
Yeah. Yeah. But all in all, it was, I don't even know how we got on this topic, but all in all, it was a really good time.
It was fun, wholesome.
It's on the whiteboard at the bottom, but I know it, so I won't advance.
Yes,
they announced
the title of the Star Trek movie. It is
right?
Star Trek Into Darkness.
But no hyphen, no colon, nothing. No, it's not like a subtitle. It's one phrase.
And it's not like Star Trek Into the Darkness. It's Star Trek Into Darkness,
no,
which is weird.
As the AV Club pointed out, it's a full phrase like Kevin took a Star Trek into darkness. Now, have they released any plot points to this? Do we know what it's about?
I know Benedict Cumberbatch is in it. Let's see.
It's not Colin.
It's
I was really hoping it was Khan.
As far as I know, it's not Khan. IGN has a little article about it. It could mean the eugenics wars, which is con, so that could be something. What else? What else does IGN
Except the
have?
Eugenics wars doesn't actually happen during the main Star Trek storyline.
They're saying it possibly is Spock's descent into darkness after Vulcan was destroyed, which, okay.
Not unlike Zachary Quinto's descent into gayness. I don't know.
Maybe they're bringing in the Klingons. Maybe, I don't know. Oh, the number one reason why it could be called Into Darkness by IGN.com. Number one, the marketing magic.
Magic.
Well, because now people who may not go see Star Trek 2 may go see Star Trek Into Darkness.
No, I'm pretty sure that everybody who wants to go see Star Trek will go see it regardless of what the hell you title it.
Yeah. I'd back that one up.
Yeah, I don't know. We don't know anything about this movie because it's J.J.
Abrams. I can think of only one Star Trek movie so bad that any Star Trek movies that come after it are negated by it.
Which is?
Star Trek Nemesis.
Nemesis was terrible.
Nemesis was terrible.
Oh, so bad.
Even Star Trek V, which was awful, but I still insist has like the best 10 minutes of
Isn't
Bones,
that what
Spock,
is
Kirk.
The Starship
yes.
movie?
It's awful. But the first 10 minutes in Yosemite with Kirk, Bones, and Spock is the best.
Nice.
I can't talk tonight.
Yes, it's the best representation of that character dynamic ever done. I love that 10 minutes of footage.
No, I thought that one was good. I thought 6 was the giant disaster.
6 was great.
Six was
on the meteor, the ice meteor.
No.
Actually, you know, this is where I get myself in trouble. I was actually kind of bored by 4.
Oh
my God!
William,
you were made bored by the best Star Trek movie ever made.
The humpback whales movie.
Like, there's a great story from Star Trek IV where they brought in a bunch of extras in that scene where Kirk and Spock are asking for directions, and they told the extras, "Don't talk to, you know, because if they talk, they've got to pay them a different scale because they're no longer extras." So this woman who wasn't part of the production wanders in because she happened to park her car on that street. She was leaving the dry cleaners or something. And she walked in and William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, you know, stop and ask, you know, how do I get to here? She had no idea what was going on and she gave them directions. The director loved it so much they decided to keep it in, but because of that, they had to have her sign a contract and they had to pay her the scale above the extras who had been sitting there for hours just doing nothing.
There's a worse part of that.
What's that?
You remember when Chekhov's giving the same speech to the motorcycle police officer?
Yeah.
That is an actual San Francisco PD officer, and he's not allowed to accept pay, and he had to sign the photographic release.
Oh, jeez. But again, that's why that movie rules, because people in San Francisco in the 80s, whenever that movie was made, late 80s, they actually got to be in the movie. Even though they didn't know they were in the movie, they got to be in the movie. You had a couple of instances of that. I think that on its own makes that movie great. Did you guys like the first Star Trek?
The J.J. Abrams one.
Well, yeah, the first movie, I thought it was great.
So did I. I mean, even Rihanna thought it was great. And that's kind of my barometer as to, am I going too geeky?
Hold on. With one reservation. Okay. Two reservations.
Wait, no. Right. Three reservations.
I got two reservations. If I think of a third one, I'll bring it up. But two reservations. One, I never buy that Spock accidentally miscalculated when this thing was going to go Nova. Like, he just, like, Spock just had some weird math error. It was accidentally too late.
Forget that. I think that line in its entirety is really odd. Okay? He's telling a story in his head, mind you, about a black hole that's going to eat Romulus or whatever, or the star that's going to blow up the supernova. And he goes, I'm taking this ship to go and do that. And then, unbelievably, the star went Nova.
Right.
That's why you were there, dumbass.
The whole story didn't make any sense. And then the part where Kirk slides down the giant ice hill, ends up in a cave, and Spock happens to be there. And I don't believe it was ever explained why he happened to be there at that
point. It was.
The Romulan guy put him there.
And then they just happened to run into each other?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm not buying it. Otherwise, I thought it was a great movie.
Well, it's a cave, okay? They both went there for shelter.
Here's what I want to know. Okay, so here's Spock, old Spock. He's a Starfleet officer, or was a Starfleet officer. He's now an ambassador. He's from the future. He gets dumped on this planet. He's hanging out in a cave when Kirk shows up. 10 minutes after Kirk shows up, they have a little conversation, and he goes, oh, let's walk to the, I think it was Spock who said, let's walk to the Starfleet outpost that's actually over there. Why the hell didn't he go there to begin with? It's, I mean, it maybe was like a time continuum, like if I go meet Scotty now, even though he didn't know Scotty was there, if I go there now, it's going to screw everything up. But they went anyway. I don't understand why Spock didn't just go to the Starfleet outpost. And
the
why Kirk wasn't going in that direction.
Ice creatures wasn't enough of a reason to stop and build a fire first.
They still walked there.
After they had fire.
So he, yeah, but Spock had the fire. So why the hell didn't he go? Was he there for like 5 minutes? I don't understand.
And we delve into uber geekiness. See, the reason I feel like a half geek when it comes to Star Trek is because I really liked the original Star Trek, and I liked the original Star Trek movies. I just never got into any of the ones after that. The last thing that I watched was that Generations movie where they tried to bring it in, and I never
watched. Generations was a TV episode that they showed in the movie theaters. It didn't really have the same scope as a movie.
I couldn't watch anything after that.
Malcolm McDowell, though.
No,
he was awesome.
I'm not saying that it's not episode one.
Malcolm McDowell stopped being cool, you know, after A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, he's based his whole career on A Clockwork Orange. That's sad.
I mean, Heroes was okay, I guess.
He was good in Heroes.
Yeah.
He was very good in Heroes. Yeah. I thought Heroes was actually very good.
Which was an awesome show for one season.
One season. It was a great one-season show.
All right, what else we got?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. we could talk politics.
We
could talk politics. I mean, the point of this show is that we're geeks, and we geek out about a lot of things. It doesn't matter what you geek out about as long as you geek out. I keep talking about my wife. She's a giant, giant Jane Austen geek. She's also a giant costume geek. So, I mean, people geek out about different things. One of the things that we all tend to geek out about is politics, and in an election year, especially one that's this contentious, I think that there's a lot of room for discussion. And today, the big thing that got me, and I'll let you guys have this conversation before I go turn on the light, is it's not even on the liberal blogosphere anymore. The mainstream media has picked up basically that Mitt Romney is starting to self-destruct.
And I saw.
Well done.
And the drinks start to get spilled. No, I saw there was actually just about every liberal article writer today. Our news event of the day, to sort of preface this, is the attacks on the embassy and consulate in Egypt and Libya. The conservatives, of course, are pushing this as Jimmy Carter's hostage moment.
That's unfair.
Of course it's unfair.
Most of the Republicans are doing a reasonably good job of realizing this is not a subject that they want to touch. You make some nice noises about how we dislike terrorism. We all dislike terrorism. And you bow your head and you say a prayer. And maybe in a couple of days you come back and make a point. However, Mitt Romney, candidate extraordinaire, has obviously chosen not to do that. He has chosen a much more aggressive posture.
Exactly. Apparently he decided to drop an accusation following his made-up caricature of the president that he's basically apologizing for America in this entire role, which completely takes the chronology and twists it around on itself. And so every liberal article writer today dropped an article about how ridiculously inappropriate the Romney move was today. But I'm curious to find out, of course, as they are pushing their competing versions of this, which one the mainstream media will roll with and which one will actually get turned into the narrative of the election.
Well, they're starting to talk about the fact that here you have Mitt Romney, and even the Republicans are kind of now under the impression that he's going to lose, that the election is Obama's to lose at this point. Obama got a great convention bounce, and he's going to do very well in the debates, which I don't doubt. Unless there's a huge gap that Obama makes in the next, 8 weeks or so, I really think that he's got a shot to pull this out for a second term.
But what the whole thing reminds you of is that there are so many unexpected events that can come up to blow it up. I saw the website that I trust is the Bible on these sort of polling things is 538.com, which is posted on New York Times, which currently has Obama up about 3.5 points. Which is better than it's been, at least over the last couple of months. But they pointed out that, after the conventions in 2000, Al Gore was up about 4 points at this point. And you never know with that sort of lead that is really a narrow lead, anything can still blow it up. I'd like to think that given that Obama's been winning this thing the whole time, that he'd pull it out. But that's still way too close for comfort, especially given just how bad Romney is.
Well, and the Republicans, I think, are to the point where they are willing to do whatever they can to win this election.
Well, yes. They've been there for a while now. They have a variety of tactics. I think what we're actually seeing in this election is less about the election than it is about media management. There are two very separate narratives going on out there, and this is the first time. We've had elements of it in the past with networks like Fox News, obviously broadcasting a slightly different narrative than mainstream media or other quote-unquote liberal-leaning news services like
slightly
MSNBC.
Different. I like that.
But they've gone off the rocker now. Quite often, the things they report are borderline simple propaganda.
I thought it was outright propaganda, and it's been that way ever since Rupert Murdoch owned Fox News.
No. There was a time where not so much with the hosts. Obviously, the hosts have. Although I have to admit, there was a time in our history, which was only like 10 years ago, unbelievably, where Sean Hannity and Alan Combs could sit on a news broadcast with one another and not begin screaming at one
another.
Sean
Hannity ruled that broadcast. Alan Combs was literally just there so Fox could say, oh, look, we've got a liberal on here.
Yeah,
and
but
that's how it works. They bring on a patsy that they can crush and make it look like a real debate that the conservative won.
Yeah, and I mean, and Alan Combs is actually a smart guy when he's not around Hannity, but he knew what his role on that show was, and he played it brilliantly.
And they do, and I know I went to I was at a law school at USC, and one of my my favorite professors there was Susan Estrich, who her claim to fame was, and I don't know if you really want to claim it in public, but she was Michael Dukakis's campaign manager. She refers to Bill and Hillary by their first name. She has a USA Today article, and she is one of the regulars on Fox News. But she knows exactly what she's getting into because she gets paid very well to do it. And I assume that is what the role of these people on there, they understand that role and are willing to take that payday in order to be that person.
Well, and again, I hate to say it, but you know, I would almost, depending on what the payday is, I would almost do that as well. I mean, because Alan Combs is still a very good voice of liberal ideas on that show, though. I mean, it literally was Hannity and then lowercase and Combs.
And at this point, then they just booted him and became Hannity.
Exactly. And then the show went crazy because John Hannity's insane.
Did you see the Keith Olbermann response to the rumors of Joe Scarborough running for president in 2016?
No.
This actually made the top Yahoo headlines yesterday. It was an entire article that was just pointing out Keith Olbermann's series of tweets to this rumor that's going around that Joe Scarborough will run for president. Of the six or seven tweets, most of them were just ha 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 and all caps being repeated over and over, along with president of what, and you've got to be kidding me, John Edwards has a better chance of getting elected this year.
Oh,
I love Keith Olbermann.
I kind of do, too. I'm kind of bummed that he got kicked off of his show on
Current. He's one of the most self-destructive anchors in existence. The man couldn't even hold it together on Current, but brilliant. And he was also brilliant on ESPN, if we can only get that back together. I know we're in sports. Never mind.
No, it's fine. So, yeah, I'm the point I was simply making is that, like I said, I think it's about media management. It's not necessarily about the election. The truth is that the 5 to 8% of people who are going to decide this election are answering a very simple question in themselves. And that's, do they feel more betrayed by Barack Obama or less distrusting of Mitt Romney? This is their dilemma. And it's understandable that it should take them so long because those 5 to 8% of people really do truly feel betrayed.
And I get that. This whole election reminds me of, for those of you out in California, we had a gubernatorial election not too long ago with Gray Davis when he got reelected, one of the last and only governors to be recalled, had done his reelection campaign. I think his approval rating, like all governor approval ratings in California, was down in the 20s or 30s. But the Republicans who couldn't manage to field a candidate, because there are none in California, could only offer up Bill Simon.
You told me the story. Yeah.
So what happened was they had a couple of okay candidates who Gray Davis ran ads against in the primary, crushed them in their primary so that the weakest candidate would win. And everybody in California said, we hate you, Gray Davis, but we dislike this other guy so much more that we're going to vote you in. And it lasted for all of about, I guess, about 6 months to a year before they said, never mind, we're recalling you. And we suddenly got the governor. But it sort of feels that way in that people are disappointed with Obama, but they dislike Romney so much more. When I saw a great interview they were doing with undecided voters, there was this woman, I think in North Carolina, who was absolutely convinced that Obama was a Muslim, but that she was going to vote for him because she disliked Romney as a ridiculously wealthy Mormon who doesn't understand regular people. And one of her biases just outweighed the other one. And that might be what our election ends up boiling down to.
Which is true. It's very, very true.
Well, that or a very real possibility is that right now you have Mitt Romney polling pretty well amongst a constituency that may not support him in the end. I can literally see him losing 4 or 5 points out of the Republican Party of people who just, if he continues to behave in the manner he's behaved so far, which is, I'm sorry, the way he's behaved so far, especially in the last week or so, is a guy who is not prepared to be president. Forget about his policies. Forget about his politics. He doesn't look like the kind of guy you want telling Marines it's time to go do something.
Well, that's the thing. Romney? He looks like a president. He's just not pulling it off. Somebody pointed out that his biggest enemy at this point might be time. Because when you're running against an incumbent, your job is basically to make the case why you need to vote out an incumbent and vote somebody else in. And as time ticks off and you still haven't made that case, it's just running down on him. He still hasn't pulled it off.
And I think the last successful president to do that was Reagan. I mean, going back to Ronald Reagan, the last successful president to do that was Reagan, only because I really can't say that Clinton's win in 92 over George Bush was because we needed to get the incumbent out. It was really because Ross Perot split the vote.
No, it was because we needed to get the incumbent out. It was a completely different situation. It's a lot harder for an incumbent to hold when you're in decline, when you're losing jobs rather than gaining jobs.
I feel bad for George the First. I thought he's not... I don't
say that like he's a king. King George the First.
I do that so that I can call the next one Mad King George the Second. But, you know, like, Bush, what did he do? I mean, the guy won a war. He betrayed his own party and raised taxes, but he pretty much, I mean, he didn't do a bad job. He was obviously well qualified for the job. He wasn't one of our modern Republican nutcases. I don't feel bad that he lost it because Clinton was obviously a badass. But
Clinton's still a badass.
I don't think that Bush did anything so bad in his first term that called for him to lose an election to some unknown Arkansas governor.
He's Bill Clinton. Come on. He presided over the greatest economic expansion in U.S. history. That's my really bad Lois Griffin impression.
My mom called from the beginning that guy was a sleazy horn dog, and she was right. But damn it, sleazy horn dog, and we love him.
And we love him. Yeah. You know what? And I don't want to say that I aspire to be Bill Clinton, but Bill Clinton is kind of a badass.
Well, and I also I have to say I've noticed a little trend, at least in modern politics, between Republican candidates for president and Democratic ones. Maybe not candidates, but ones who've actually held the office. The Democrats may be more despicable as men in their personal behavior, but we're a more ethical and moral country under their leadership than the Republicans are. You can't help but get away with the way both Bushes behaved. In the first Gulf War, yeah, we won the Gulf War, and George Bush told 50,000 people to rise up and revolt and then let them be slaughtered. And then you have Bush 2, who, let's just face it, there were a lot of decisions made. We can argue whether they were good decisions or bad decisions, but a great many of them weren't very ethical. I don't know about that. I didn't disapprove of us going into Afghanistan. I only had a problem with us staying there. And that's just because I happen to remember the 1980s in Afghanistan and realize that that's a really bad place to fight.
I don't necessarily disagree with the decision to go into Afghanistan. I mean, despite the fact that the 9/11 terrorists were by and large from Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
No, but they had a lot of active support from the Taliban.
Obviously, Al-Qaeda's the supporters. They were the ones who were ruling Afghanistan at the time. It makes sense to go in. Iraq being a completely different beast.
And not that I want to keep us on politics, but I'm about to
cut you off. So this is your thing right here.
Okay, this is
your
last final thing.
Because if we're going to talk about King George the First, King George the First was crowned in the 1700s. So we could go there, but I don't know if necessarily we
that's
want
not
to.
Where I'm going. there's
that'll be the last
a new book out on the Bush 2 years that suggests that Bush maybe didn't see quite so much about 9/11 coming because he was so fixated on Iraq before 9/11. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we can all agree that perhaps there was some element of conspiracy to get us to invade Iraq.
Oh, completely. Completely, completely. But I'm going to cut you off because this is not a politics show. I'd like to start a politics show.
Well, you know,
but I think I'm going to have William actually be the guy who does the politics show. So coming soon, coming soon, coming soon.
Yes.
Newsingsofageek.com is going to have a politics show. We'll figure that out later.
We'd like to tell our 12 listeners that we won't be on next week.
I was going to get to that toward the end, but we'll hold that. That's going to be a I don't know what it's called in radio because I'm not a radio guy, but that's a tease. We're going to tease the next one. I'm going to do that probably in about 5 minutes.
All
However,
right.
I want to talk about one more thing. The board's up. I'm going to give William the pick. What do we talk about next?
I'm most interested in the one at the very bottom about a BS Evil Dead remake.
All right,
and that was Dez.
There is a remake under work for Evil Dead. The reason it's BS is because there are two
male
characters.
I'm going to stop you there. William just brought me another beer, and I have a three-quarters beer full. I am having a good time because now I've got two beers.
Okay. That's really not of much consequence to Evil Dead
to Evil
sucking.
Dead, but it should be. Well, it's going to make the Evil Dead suckage better is going to be alcohol.
Okay. Well, really the thing that makes the Evil Dead remake bullshit, Will, is the fact that there are two male characters in the movie. One named David and one named Eric. So they are not having
Ash. No Ash.
Primarily, I think, because they don't have the balls to recast it.
Now, who is making this Evil Dead remake?
Sam Raimi is the executive producer, obviously. As to who's directing it, I don't know. Mr.
And this is
IMDb man.
The works.
Yes.
Oh, do I need to get an IMDb?
Sure, go right ahead. Pull up some information.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Can we just agree that there are certain things that cannot be remade?
Evil Dead is certainly not one of them because they remade it. They called it Evil Dead 2.
Well, and that was brilliant, but that's different. I mean, like, I remember that the MTV Studios, the makers of brilliant movies, was rumored for a while, I don't know if it's still in the works, to making a Rocky Horror remake.
Don't do it. Well, we're going to do a Rocky Horror show in a couple weeks. That's the... I'm okay with a Rocky Horror Picture Show remake.
How are you okay with that?
No, we're going to get into that. I'm just going to say this. The Rocky Horror Picture Show movie is terrible. The Rocky Horror Show play is amazing, and that's all I'm going
to
say.
We'll go back to Will's initial point, which is, yes, I'd agree that the only stuff that's been coming out as a remake recently that's been any good are things that are specifically very different than the product they're remaking.
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11 is less a remake than it is a movie that has a similar title to a previous movie and steals some character names. It is certainly indicative of that class of movies, of heist movies, of con movies, but it's not really a remake of Ocean's 11. It's just kind of, it's in Vegas, so Steven Soderbergh went, you know what, I want it to be a Rat Pack movie.
And when we do the Vegas show, we will talk about that.
Yes.
Because
so
we're going to really get into that. But, I mean, the whole remake thing. I mean,
yes. No, the point I'm making.
A 50-year ban on remakes.
What's the word? Enforce that. Like, who comes up with that ban and how do you enforce it?
With your wallets.
Yes, that's the point I'm making here. There are some stuff that's been really good as a remake, but it's very different than the product it's remaking. Battlestar Galactica is a very good example. That TV show has nothing to do with the original TV show, other than the fact that there's Cylons in it. And granted, it is within continuity, sort of. Not really, but that doesn't really matter. And I thought that 21 Jump Street was quite good, but obviously the 21 Jump Street that Jonah Hill made, that he wrote, is not really a 21 Jump Street.
I heard it had nothing to do with the show.
Movie. Oh, it had a little bit to do with the show.
I liked 21 Jump Street. I didn't see the movie, but I really liked
21
Jump Street.
But it's really a comedy. It's a straight comedy. It's not really, it's a little bit of an action comedy, but it's not the real drama that they tried to make somewhat unsuccessfully with 21 Jump Street, the TV show.
I was just thinking the only other way that you crush a remake that you don't want to come out is with the example of the Ninja Turtles movie that was in the works.
It still is.
No, it has been shut down.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
There was so much negative internet press on the fact that they were no longer teenage nor mutant, but were now aliens, that the whole thing has actually been shelved.
Which is probably for the better, which just goes to show that... Remakes, I think, can work, but only in very specific circumstances.
Well, I don't know about that. Like I said, you have to... They're fine if you take them as a theme and then you make your own movie. but anytime you're trying to make someone else's movie, it's not going to be any good.
Okay.
The perfect example is Ocean's 11.
Okay.
You know why?
Because it's its own movie.
Who really has most of the scenes in Ocean's 11, the original?
Sinatra.
Who has most of the scenes in Ocean's 11, the remake?
Brad Pitt.
Nobody.
That's true. It really is an ensemble
movie.
It's
an ensemble
movie.
Piece.
It really
it's
is an
a very
ensemble
different
piece.
Movie.
It really
it,
is.
It took some themes from the original Ocean's 11. It takes place in Vegas. They wanted their character to be called Daniel Ocean. This is what they stole from it, but they made their own movie out of it. That's how you make a good, successful remake. You don't. A good example is that I told you briefly they were in the works to make a Greatest American Hero remake. Obviously, that movie would suck.
Well, yeah, I could.
Well, first of all, they'd cut the theme song. Second, you cut the theme song, it's over.
When I was a kid, I had that record. I loved that theme song.
And I'm insistent that's the best 90 seconds in 40-Year-Old Virgin when that theme song is going.
Yeah, no doubt.
But from what I heard from other people, the subject matter was more Green Lantern. Like, a bunch of people had been given the suit.
No, it doesn't work that way.
It still would have been a more interesting movie than you trying to remake that 80s television show about an inept teacher who flies around in a magic suit and tries to fight bad guys. And they weren't even, like, superhero bad guys. They were, like, gangsters and stuff.
70s gangsters. It reminds me of the famous Quincy. Do you remember that show, Quincy?
Yes, I remember
there
Quincy.
There was a great episode. Do you remember that?
Very vaguely.
Yeah. There was a great episode where, at one point, Quincy was trying to find somebody, and he goes to a you know, on TV what they could show is like a 70s nightclub, and he stops the music, and he says, "Have you seen this person? I'm trying to stop this other person from giving her a codeine overdose." When's the last time anyone's overdosed on codeine?
I don't know.
It's just worst. It's really the worst. It's so bad. It's so bad. Before we close up shop tonight, as you said earlier, we are not doing Musings of a Geek next week. We're actually going to be doing another show. The idea is to kind of create a small kind of radio station, and in order to do that, we want more shows than just Musings of a Geek. And so Dez actually came up with a really good idea for a show, and I'd like you to talk like really briefly about it and what we're going to do and you know, get people excited about it, and that will happen every third week at this point, I think, is what
something
the time
like
is.
That. Once a month. We're gonna shoot for once a month. The truth is if you've listened to the entirety of this broadcast, we tend to jump around subject matter a lot. So the idea of pilots is to stick with one.
What's the show called?
Pilots.
Pilots. And then what's the idea?
That we stick to a single subject matter. In this case, it's going to be television. And specifically looking at first episodes, pilot episodes, why they work, why they don't work. And we're going to look at some of the more notable, particularly cult ones. We're going to start next week with the 10th anniversary of Firefly. We're going to look at Joss Whedon's brilliant pilot, Serenity, and the not quite so brilliant first broadcast episode, The Train Job, which Fox made him do. And we're going to take a look at them, and we're going to look at all elements of them, how characters are introduced, how they do that in television, especially in something like a pilot where you don't have a lot of time for exposition or talking. Or it's not good when you have a character come on stage and go, "You used to be in the war, didn't you? I remember that you used to be in the war." So we're going to look at their little tricks of the trade, and we're basically just going to geek out. And rather than
geek out.
Tonight's broadcast where we went from Remus Lupin being in Red 2
to Mitt Romney to Much Ado About Nothing. Exactly.
It'll be a little bit more focused. So if you're one of those people who's not ADHD like we are, you may like it a little better.
Exactly. Really what I've kind of decided is if I'm going to stick with Musings of the Geek as kind of my sort of flagship, Pilots is going to be yours. So,
yes.
I mean, I'll run the board if you want to have Will, or Will will be here, but if you want to bring somebody else
of course,
more
Will will be
to.
Here. I imagine that every week we'll have Will's perspective.
Because I think we kind of have to.
And no. Specifically in Pilots, because I imagine that many of the pilots you and I have seen and probably talk about at some length right now, whereas Will will always be approaching most of them with a fresh eye.
Which is why I'm going to stick you with one that you haven't seen for one of them.
Yeah. Yes,
well,
eventually.
I really want to do Mad Men at some point, and I really want to do Lost. But again, everybody listening, this is going to be Dez's show. We may end up getting to more of a twice a month, every week kind of thing, depending on how the podcast network that I've created sort of grows.
And how badly we play darts.
And how badly we play
darts. If we go through a downturn in our dart playing ability, we may end up podcasting a lot more than normal.
So basically, Musings of a Geek number 3 will take place in 2 weeks. Pilots number 1 will take place next week.
And we hope you come back.
And we do hope you come back. That's going to be this week's show. Once again, you can catch us. You probably already caught us at musingsofageek.com. You can check out the blog when I post, which is not very often, at blog.musingsofageek.com.
And be sure to go and explain to him how DC characters are just so much worse than
there
Marvel
will be
characters.
A new post this week.
We're going to have one independent pod that's just Marvel and Marvel versus DC.
We can do that. Maybe that'll be number 3. A Twitter, you can reach us at moagblog.com, or you can get me at Dan Zisco, and Dez is at D Hassing, I believe.
Yeah, that's it.
At D Hassing.
And Will doesn't have one.
Will doesn't have one. We're going to create a Facebook page at some point, so look for that. And that's sort of our night. Darts?
Darts.
Gonna play darts. Everybody have a good week.